It's Minnesota News on a Thursday, October 17th. It's the NPR News Update. Hi, I'm Phil Picardi. Ahead, Minnesota's Congress members explain their votes on the government shutdown. Minsure offers a status update 2 weeks in. Cops look for the perpetrators of domestic violence. And we hear the cool sounds of Jarek Bischoff. First, hundreds of thousands of federal workers are back on the job today, now that Congress and the president have agreed on a resolution to fund the government. Mark Zedeklik reports.
Near the airport in South Minneapolis, federal workers heading into the Whipple Federal Building were not interested in talking about the end of the shutdown. Jeff Burke, inside the building via his mobile telephone, said he was happy to be called back to work and relieved that Congress passed a law ensuring he and other furloughed federal workers will get back pay for the time they spent off the job. But with yet another temporary solution to fund the government, Burke said he's fed up.
I just feel that, you know, just burnt out, and that, you know, we'll be going down this road again, and I just don't feel the same about my job anymore.
Burke's wife, Carol, who was furloughed the same day he was also called back to work early this morning. Both help process veterans' claims. They spent most of their furlough time at home trying not to spend money. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota's congressional delegation voted yes on the bill to end the government shutdown and raise the debt ceiling, save one. Both Minnesota senators and seven of the state's eight House members voted in favor of the bill. Republican Michelle Bachmann said no. Brett Neely has more on what lawmakers learned as a result of the shutdown.
House Republicans hold their caucus meetings in a basement conference room in the U.S. Capitol. After House Speaker John Boehner delivered the news yesterday afternoon that the battle was over and their side had lost, most of the members walked out into the surrounding tunnels stone-faced. Among them was Congressman John Klein.
What was this all for then? I mean, if you didn't make changes to Obamacare and you didn't make any changes to...
We didn't get what we wanted. I mean, it's as simple as that.
The government shutdown lasted more than 2 weeks and led to a near default on the national debt. It also prompted a bruising internal debate within the GOP between those who believed that tough tactics would lead to the dismantling of the Affordable Care Act and those who believed that goal was out of reach. Among the House Republicans who considered a shutdown unwise was Eric Paulson, who chose his words carefully.
There were some that didn't have realistic attitudes about what was achievable.
Paulson lamented that Republicans could have spent the past 2 weeks highlighting the troubled rollout of the health insurance marketplaces that are part of the health care law.
But that was taken off the headlines of the front page, given there was a government shutdown.
One House Republican who was more defiant in the face of adversity was Michelle Bachmann. She was among the Tea Party members who had pushed for a shutdown and has long argued that breaching the debt ceiling wouldn't actually lead to a default. But as that deadline ticked closer, Bachmann said it was President Obama who had played hardball.
What he did is count on the fact that Republicans would be the adults in the room, and at the end of the day, we would be unwilling to see not only our credit rating hurt, but also see the United States default on the debt. We wouldn't do that. We're responsible people. It wouldn't happen.
This is at least the fourth down-to-the-wire showdown in Congress in the past 2.5 years, and the first that left the federal government partially shuttered. After each cliffhanger, lawmakers from both parties have said, maybe this time we've learned our lesson. But DFL Senator Al Franken said prevailing in this showdown was important because it established that Republicans couldn't demand major policy concessions through must-pass bills.
We shouldn't create a crisis in order to negotiate with each other. That's what we're basically saying. We can't lurch from crisis to crisis.
The government funding bill that passed last night expires in January, while the debt limit will have to be raised again by February 7th. Democrats all cited polls showing Republicans taking a bruising in public opinion over this confrontation as a sign that passing those bills in an election year should be easier. Looking ahead, DFL Senator Amy Klobuchar pointed to a committee that's been created as a result of this deal to work out a budget between the House and Senate as the next challenge.
We got ourselves out of this? Okay, great. But that is pretty minor compared to the bigger deal that we have to do.
But Democratic Congressman Keith Ellison pointed to the no votes on the final agreement, all Republicans, as a sign that the basic dynamic in Congress is unchanged.
You know, you get 144 people saying no, you know, that's quite a few people, and it lets you know just how much of a block to oppose things is contained within that Republican caucus.
Ellison said no one, not Democrats, Republicans, or the president, looks especially good to the public after an episode like this.
It's so bad that nobody really wants to revisit this again.
He noted that the last government shutdown was 17 years ago, and he hopes it will be at least that long before the next one. Brett Neely, Minnesota Public Radio News, Washington.
Minsure, the state's new health insurance exchange, gave its first look at enrollment numbers yesterday. The short version is this: lots of people are pursuing options on the site, but far fewer are taking the final step and committing to a plan. Reporter Catherine Richard talked numbers last night with Tom Cran.
Give us the rundown. How many people have enrolled in health coverage through Minsure?
Well, the number you want to pay attention to is 3,700. That's the number of people who are sort of in the process of enrollment, the final stages of getting a plan. 2,500 of those are enrolling in medical assistance. That's our Medicaid. 850 are waiting for an invoice from Minnesota Care. And about 400 are in the process of paying for a plan. They've either chosen to be billed by the insurer or they've paid through the Minsure website. So again, 3,700 in the process of enrollment, but that's compared to the nearly 12,000 people who have just sort of completed the application process and haven't quite gotten there yet.
Now, how does that stack up to what Minsure said they expected?
Well, it's actually right in line with what they've expected. Minsure Executive Director April Tun Malmlov said that most people won't pay for coverage now. That starts in January. They're still going to peruse their options for the next couple months.
So the insurance companies who are involved in Minsure, what are they saying about how they feel about these initial numbers?
Well, pretty good about the numbers. They're in line, too, with what they expected. Again, lots of shopping, not a whole lot of buying yet. They point out that people still have a few months to pick a plan. However, insurance companies are concerned that they haven't gotten any application data for the few people that have chosen their plans. They were expecting that this week.
And why is that?
Well, Minsure says they're trying to electronically transmit this consumer information accurately, and they're still testing to make sure that they can do that so that the insurers don't have to go back and clean it all up when it's all in the insurer's hands. Now, this really poses a problem for insurers. They don't consider enrollment complete until personal information has been received and payment has been received. And they're also a little worried about their reputation. I mean, imagine this situation. Tom Cran goes on Minsure, thinks that he's paid for a plan, and assumes he's enrolled in it. And then he calls up Blue Cross or Medica and says, hey, I'm Tom Cran. Tell me about my benefits. And they have no record of that. It could be confusing to the consumer and a mark on the insurer's reputation. Minsure says they should probably have solved this problem by the end of the month.
So they had a bit of a rocky start at Minsure technically. How are things going on that front?
Well, Minsure says there's still some problems. The site doesn't play well with Windows 8, for instance. We're just learning that this week. And some people who choose a plan and then come back later to pay have had trouble completing that transaction.
Okay.
It appears, though, that they have worked through some of the bigger problems, namely account creation that was preventing people from moving forward in the enrollment process. That was a big problem in the first week or so that Minsure was live.
And will we continue to get updates from them on how things are going into the future?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, they have board meetings regularly. They're hosting regular press conferences. We'll keep you updated on the numbers.
Catherine Richard, thank you very much.
No problem.
Catherine with Tom on All Things Considered. A Hennepin County juvenile court judge yesterday ordered a 9-year-old boy who stowed away on a flight to Las Vegas to continue living away from his home while he and his family receive counseling. Brant Williams reports.
The boy was not in court, but his parents were. They didn't speak in the courtroom. Instead, attorneys representing each parent asked Judge Joseph Klein to close the hearing and future proceedings to the public due to the heightened media attention the boy's case has received. One attorney said a media organization offered to pay the boy's mother for an exclusive story. He did not say which outlet made the offer. Klein denied the motion to close the proceedings, but he did order parties not to leak information to the public. The judge also ordered the county to do an evaluation to see if the boy can be placed with any relatives. He said the boy is not safe left in his parents' care. In the meantime, the parents will be allowed nearly unrestricted contact with their son. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
A Ramsey County juvenile court judge has certified a 16-year-old boy to stand trial as an adult In the near-fatal beating of a St. Paul man last summer, Matt Sepik reports.
Sundarian DeAngelo Butler faces four counts, including first-degree assault and aggravated robbery. He also faces gang-related charges. Prosecutors say Butler was among the five people who attacked 26-year-old Ray Widstrand on August 4th as he tried to walk past a street fight near his home on St. Paul's east side. Widstrand suffered severe head trauma and had to have a section of his skull removed. He's recovering and hopes to be out of rehab by mid-December. 19-year-old Isaac Maiden faces similar charges. Three other teens have been charged as juveniles in the case. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Dozens of cops fanned out across part of the Twin Cities yesterday looking for domestic violence suspects. It was part of a nationwide effort to raise the profile of efforts to combat the crime. The sweeps are meant to show victims law enforcement takes domestic abuse seriously, and police want to let offenders know they can't slip through the cracks of the criminal justice system. Here's our Tim Nelson.
Police Sergeant Jesse Molnar hit the street for what was literally a house-to-house search through St. Paul.
You can go to the back.
He and a squad of cops and probation officers were hunting down a list of domestic violence suspects, warrants in hand.
St. Paul Police, we have a warrant for Ken. Is he here?
Right here.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing, Kenneth?
I'm okay.
Okay, we got a warrant, bud.
I know.
Okay, let's take care of that, all right?
I'll get my walker.
Okay.
That's Ken Shaw. He's 55, and police say he was charged with domestic abuse after allegedly hitting a girlfriend with his cane. He was one of the men and women arrested today in a day-long push to round up more than 100 suspects. Loose ends left by what police consider some of the most difficult and complex cases, domestic violence. They're crimes where victims sometimes help the perpetrators. The danger isn't always obvious, and the facts often elusive. But dozens of law enforcement personnel, including police officers, sheriff's deputies, probation officers, ICE agents, and even U.S. Marshals, spent the day tracking down a most wanted list of domestic abuse suspects. Again, Sergeant Molnar.
Well, we want the victims to know that we are out in the community. It's not just a matter of them making reports and hoping that something is done. This sends a message out in the community that these people are a priority for us. If even the people we don't pick up today, we're still confident that they're going to get this message.
The East Metro officers were part of a nationwide effort started by a sheriff's office in Oregon 11 years ago. It now covers 20 states and involves more than 200 police agencies. The one-day National Family Violence Apprehension Detail is meant to give what is normally a very private and sometimes secretive issue a public face. Mary Nash is commander of the St. Paul Police Department's Family Violence Unit.
When you have this many people involved in doing a warrant sweep, I think they said there's about 120, 121 warrants today. It is about making the big impression that we're not going away. We're still going to actively look for you, and on a day like today, we're coming in mass, and we're coming all over not only St. Paul to look for you, but our surrounding cities in Ramsey County.
The Ramsey County Sheriff's Office, which organized the sweep, said there were 12 arrests by 3 o'clock this afternoon.
That was 3 o'clock on Wednesday, and that was Tim Nelson. The leading candidates for mayor of Minneapolis all support a proposal to simplify the city charter. Curtis Gilbert reports.
In addition to electing a new mayor November 5th, Minneapolis voters will also decide whether to rewrite the city's charter in modern English. The plain language charter revision strips away outdated sections related to the cleaning of stables and the discharge of steam by locomotives. It also removes antiquated words like doth and shall. At a debate last night, 7 of the leading candidates supported the revision, including former City Council President Jackie Cherry Holmes.
Government doesn't work if people can't understand the documents that are governing them.
Current City Council member Don Samuels agreed.
Thou shouldest have modern language for thy laws so that everybody can understand it.
The Minneapolis City Attorney's Office opposes the proposed charter revision, fearing it will create unforeseen legal problems. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
A taconite mine in northeastern Minnesota is heading for an environmental review. Here's Dan Crocker.
North Shore Mining Company is asking the Minnesota DNR for permission to expand its Peter Mitchell mine near Babbitt. Several environmental groups petitioned the DNR to conduct an environmental assessment worksheet for the proposal. They argued the expansion had the potential to result in acid mine drainage. North Shore Mining owner Cliffs Natural Resources says it supports the review. Cliff spokeswoman Sandy Karnowski says the company has a conservative plan to expand the mine.
We think that through the environmental assessment worksheet that folks will be able to see more about that plan and feel comfortable with where we're moving in our mine.
The Peter Mitchell Mine is located about 1 mile from the proposed Polymet copper-nickel mine site south of Babbitt. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
You may wonder if a certain noise is loud enough to potentially damage your hearing. Maplewood-based 3M says it has an app for that. Martin Moylan has more.
The company's personal safety division has developed a smartphone application that includes a sound level meter to warn users if noise levels are harmful. 3M figures the app's customers will be professionals charged with monitoring workplace noise. But 3M wants consumers to find the app helpful as well. Ted Madison is an audiologist with 3M.
They may be concerned about noise levels in their wood shop at home, or they're out snowmobiling over the weekend or doing other noisy recreational activities.
3M already makes noise measurement and hearing protection devices. When NFL fans in Seattle and Kansas City competed in a contest to see who has the loudest stadium, 3M donated more than 60,000 pairs of earplugs. Fans in both stadiums reportedly topped 136 decibels. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Jarek Bischoff didn't set out to become an orchestra composer. He's a rock and roller who backed into orchestral business almost by accident. But fans say he's possibly the future face of classical music. Tomorrow, Bischoff brings his unique blend of rock and classical to the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul, where UN Care reports he will add a very local twist.
It dawned on Jarek Bischoff he was an orchestral composer about 5 years ago. He worked as a producer with friends' rock bands. They kept pushing the limits, adding cellos, violins, and other instruments into the mix.
Each time we'd record, we'd get a little more ambitious until finally one time I muted the rock band and it was a whole orchestra happening. And I thought, oh man, that's kind of exciting. I could maybe kind of do this.
Of course, composing orchestral music is one thing. Getting it performed is a much bigger challenge. But Bischoff, who grew up on a boat his parents sailed around South America, was used to solving problems. When he decided to make an album, he used what he had at hand.
I had a bike, and I had one microphone and a laptop,
which he used to visit various musician friends. He gave them parts to play and recorded them, sometimes over and over, so he could later layer the recordings to create an orchestral sound.
You know, I'd bike over to the violin player's house and have her record it 15 times or something like that. She got the short end of the stick on this recording because I think there's 9 tracks on the record, and she probably played hundreds and hundreds of violin tracks on that record.
The project allowed Bischoff to collaborate with others, but exercised the self-admitted control freak side of his personality. He sang on some of the tracks, but says he always imagined certain other voices on some of the songs, specifically David Byrne and Brazilian musical hero Caetano Veloso. Through a mixture of luck and string pulling, both ended up on the record too.
Eyes, a nose, a mouth. Fascinated how your eyes...
With its cross-genre appeal, the finished album, Composed, attracted a lot of attention. Some see his music as forging the elusive link between rock and classical music, which has long been sought as a way of lowering the average age of concert hall audiences. Bischoff says, too often, orchestras have been used to add what he calls fluff to rock records. He prefers to see the orchestra as the band and get it rocking. He is very specific in naming the results, calling it orchestral pop.
That's a carefully thought out couple of words because it's definitely not classical music. But, you know, it's not pop music, but it is pop music in its structure.
Composed has led to another set of on-stage collaborations, such as the show on Friday at the Fitzgerald Theatre in St. Paul. As part of the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra's Liquid Music Series, Bischoff will appear with SPCO musicians and a number of invited guests. These include drummer Greg Saunier from the band Deerhoof, Norwegian singer Sondre Lerche, Icelandic singer Olaf Arnolds, and Minnesota vocalist Chani Linné from the band Polisa. They will each perform songs from Composed and then orchestral arrangements of their own material written by Bischoff.
So an audience gets to see them sing one of my tunes and they get to see them do their own music in a completely different context.
This is also part of Jerick Bischoff's collaborative process. He says he wants to play music with and for people as opposed to just at them. That, he hopes, will help fill the concert hall seats. Ewan Kerr, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's the NPR News Update for a Thursday. I'm Phil Picardi. Thanks for coming along for the ride. Back here tomorrow. And doesn't it sound cool to be talking over this music? In a world where NPR News updates are podcasts, you can get them each day by clicking or having them sent to your inbox. Anyway, I'm Phil Picardi. Thanks for joining me.